Okay, idiots, go lay down. Hey there, Shopping Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show. I'm Dave Buzzcut Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Is it because it's hot as hell and it feels good? Or what was the...
Super hot in Texas. Like, you know, 90 with like 80% humidity kind of vibes, you know?
Just right. Like, yeah.
But...
What else though?
The what combing? Triggered it was yeah. My son got a buzz cut. He's super into it. I don't know. I think it's a meme or something going around, but I saw him get a buzz cut and I was like, that looks refreshing.
Gelitude.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got really jealous of my son's buzz cut. And so now we both have buzz cuts. And
so like, how fast does it grow though? Like by Christmas, are you going to be Samurai Dave again or no?
I might. Yeah. It might grow back. I think that last, you know, I got a haircut for job interviews. So that would have been like about a year and a half or so with the old haircut. So,
So you grow pretty quick. Must take your vitamins or whatever.
Well, I have a distracted brain, but good hair, you know? So sure. That's what I bring to the table. I'm interviewing for this job. I am pretty distracted generally, but I have good hair. So that's what I offer.
Yeah, totally. When you pull your hair back during an interview, I think that works. It's just a power move kind of.
Oh yeah, I do the sexy librarian thing. I remember
Jake
Alba
used to work for us with long hair, and we were all so jealous. We're like, duh, that's good hair. And then he buzzed it too. So it was dangerous. Jake, you never came back after you
never came back.
Buzzed it. Well, yeah, keep it long.
And there's certain midlife crises you can have, you know, and I felt like buzz cut was a safe one. Yeah, you know, that was like, you know, I'm going to change it up. You know, I already bought a Jeep and buzz cut is the next one I could do. Sure. You know, there's probably a few more, but you know, I was like, these are good ones. So
fair enough. Well, welcome to the No Hair Club. It's nice.
You're back from Amsterdam. You talked a bit about it at with Brad Frost, with the Frost Brothers. How was CSS Day?
It was tremendous. I feel like I took so many good notes while I was there, and I'm only half through them at most, you know, because I think that was my style at this conference. So I'm not going to extrapolate too far from that, but was to write down a person, and they could be at a speaker. It could have been a side event. It could have been a conversation in a hallway, and then just write down like a tiny bit about what was interesting about that interaction or something they said or something I want to chase down or something. Mm-hmm. I don't need elaborate notes. But I also don't want to forget like the highlights. So I'm kind of proud of my notes because I'm just like, oh, here's Breck's interesting thing. And I was like, okay, oh yeah. You know, and all I need is like one line of text to like remember what was so interesting about that. And yeah, it was great, dude. Like, you know, a conference like that, that's like my number one professional thing. And hanging out with other people who've made it their number one professional thing, and the like nerd language that we speak and just how niche the conversations can be, you know, like walking up to a conversation. They did the Pac-Man rule thing. Have you heard that, where you don't close the circle entirely?
Oh, yeah.
You leave the little gap. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Adam was trying to make it the conic gradient rule, but it just wasn't. Didn't catch on. Because it's like... Yeah. What kind of conic gradient, you know? Everybody knows what Pac-Man looks like.
HSLA, so we have to line up in like skin ketones around the circle.
That's would have worked at this one conference. Yeah, tremendous. Really fun. You know, and walk up to a conversation and have it be like about how you can... You know, pass certain keywords within the step function, which is a function that is only relevant within animation timing function. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I want to talk about that for an hour, please.
Yeah. It's nice to find your people. I feel like I have those people on my little team at Microsoft, just people who you could be like, what do we think of custom idents? And that, like, people have mm-hmm. opinions, or, you know, just as dumb as that little tiny feature is. People,
I know. I would love to talk about that. That's good stuff. And now we're using them more and more because, like, you have to use them for certain things, right? Like, you have to use them for an anchor name, mm-hmm. or for example, is one of the things where, and you can't not have it be a custom ident. It makes you wonder if, like, if they were around when, like, keyframes were invented. You know, keyframe animation, you can just name whatever you want. But these days, the things that you have to name whatever you want are. Tend to be require the double dash, and the double dash is confusing because it's like, isn't that what custom properties uses? Yes, but they are custom idents that contain a value. I don't know.
I wonder if we could retcon it and that becomes just the retro standard. Just anything where you invented a name, you put dash dash. I think about this a lot, like for languages, you know, there's a lot on the a good design of a computer programming language, right?
Yeah.
I feel like one of CSS's coolest features was the dash dash WebKit, right? Which is to say, dash dash, non-standard. This is made up.
Mm.
And I wish JavaScript.
Just one dash, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, dash WebKit. Yeah, sorry. Dash WebKit. And then they took that and made it like dash dash my thing. Feel like that was like a great way to say I'm extending the platform, I'm extending things. Then, like, if JavaScript had this and you were trying to be like,
is Dave going on record as defending vendor prefixes?
I'm defending the idea of allowing language extensions in a way that doesn't block the language from growing.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So, like JavaScript's whole, what was it? The flatten, you know.
Oh, flat map or whatever.
Smooshgate.
Smooshgate. Yeah.
Smooshgate. We need like a good graphic. We need
because one library was just popular enough that it would get, it would hurt, you know, it kind of blocked the web platform from doing what it wanted to do. And everybody knew that was unfortunate. I think, you know, there was no, the only drama there was that, like, wow, that sucks. You know, mm-hmm. but nobody disagreed about the problem or the solution.
But I feel like if it had, if JavaScript, Brendan Eich, in the old days, made string.prototype or array.prototype, and then said, if somebody wants to add onto this their own thing, it has to start with a special character like $ or dash dash, then we would solve so many problems because you can't just patch string. You can't just, and maybe the patchability is a good thing, but you can't just like patch a function or something in, or maybe even just a convention would have worked, you know, that, hey, we don't patch the main thing. We have to like create a new thing and extend it, or we have to, you have to have a special character.
It reminds me of data attributes and mm-hmm. HTML, where everybody seemed to have gotten the message correctly. That's like, don't just invent your own attributes. Like, you can, and it works, but if we just all agree, which we miraculously have, to not except do that
web components, but go ahead. Yeah.
yeah, but it's, why is it fine in that circumstance? It still seems not fine to me. It still seems like
I guess because they're never going to conflict with native elements.
They never will, ever?
Yeah. Except in the case if we had the is attribute. Like,
or extends, right? Like
is could, fancy button.
Right. That's why I mean never. Like, that seems wrong. Like, eventually you're like, okay, I'm not extending a native select yet. I wish I was, but I'm not. But but if they make that happen someday, then I could. And now it is a problem.
Now it is a problem. Yeah. I don't think I don't know if that's going to ever be solved.
Maybe not.
Toothpaste is out of the tube in that situation.
But I get you the point. I mean, we're already talking about niche stuff. If you draw a line in the sand and be like, I will never make up an attribute, you're doing the web a solid, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
Yeah. Or if you're always, I will always use a prefix.
You get a little bonus. You get a little bag of tricks. They give you the data set property to do it. Then you got data set, and data set is nice. So enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a proposal a while ago. Matthew CP, is that who it was? It was about, and maybe Leah Veru was on there too, or part of it, but this idea of sort of like a custom attribute or a registered attribute, sort of almost like a web component, but for attributes. So you could almost build like views, directive syntax, like VIF and VELSE with.
Oh, you like these, register them or something?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like a custom attribute sort of spec. And it was pretty cool. I wish it had taken off, but I think, you know,
is it because they can have like reactive properties and that you could make them do special stuff? Like, yeah, I think of the ones like, what's the one like checked or whatever, or open on a details element, like dot open, if you set it to true, we'll set the attribute also. It's like, what do you call that, reflective property or something?
Yeah,
that'd be kind of neat if you could like automatically wire that up. I guess that answers the why question.
Yeah, it would be cool to wire that up. So like vshow, right? If something exists in state, vshow document.body has class foo, you could then show an element. That would be cool for, it would be cool to have that on any element, not just custom elements and, not just like doing for loops for this thing and then showing it. You know, it's sort of like you have registered it. It is a attribute that works, you know, it can take any sort of property in there. So it just evaluates a condition is true or false. Anyway, that was kind of like a cool, it was a cool spec. It would be cool to have, I think they were saying you have to have a dash in the attribute to make it a valid custom one. So I think that's what they're trying to scope out.
Now that there's more and more custom elements, this is another, Adam has a good post on it, but everybody's had this thought. I think it's not the most original thought, is that when you name something like keyframes, or even more so now with custom idents, because they have different purposes, like show what the different purpose is, which is a great excuse to use an emoji. So now, instead of it just being superfluous or whatever, just being like this cheesy thing that you can do, it actually has meaning. Like there's an anchor emoji. So if the custom ident, which there can only be one of that name, so it's not like there's any mystery there. If you've set it to be the anchor name, put a little anchor emoji in the name. And then once you've done that, now the barn doors are open. Like what else, should you?
Yeah. That's funny. They support emoji. I'm in a project where I'm stripping out emojis, token project, but I'm not a fan of, I emojis are cute until they're super not, and then you have a lot.
Yeah, they render differently, and there can be Unicode problems and stuff. So yeah, I don't know that I would, especially on a sufficiently large code base. I think something like open square bracket anchor or something, or ANC or something, would be nice to know. Like, I actually think that would be helpful for me, and I would support that.
No, because I got, container names are something that don't have a custom ident, but I wish they did, but
yeah, like that's dash a good dash example.
Container or whatever.
Yep.
But then, the emoji might be cool because then you could just do like box foo.
I think view transition names also don't need it to be. Anyway, some stuff does and some stuff doesn't.
They should. I feel like we should. That I was involved in tabs in Open UI.
Scroll timelines do. That's the other one.
Scroll timelines do. Yeah, yeah. That's weird. But I was involved in Open UI, and we talk about popover and different things and tabs. And, my main concern, and I brought it up a couple times, was I want things to be consistent. We keep inventing things, and then every decade we just change the rules on what we think something is called. And I wish we, or the behavior showing, show modals, show hide, close. And so I wish there was a standard definition, if that makes sense. Like hide applies the hidden attribute, show close removes the open attribute or something like that. You know, just like a very strict grammar or rules, like very consistent API across things. So, because imagine if HTML audio elements had a play function and video had a spin that reel function. We wouldn't like it. They should be the same thing.
So. Right, right. But I don't know. I think things tend to snowball. You know, you make one bad mistake and then the right answer is to not break it.
The right answer is to not break it. And then people try to fix it in the next one. But we need to backport. Right, and then it
gets confusing.
The feature.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's hard to change things that exist now. I mean, just as like a tiny aside, I have to, there's certain things that you touch so rarely that you forget how to do it. That was my intro to say I have to update a WordPress plugin, you know, and I just noticed it, you know, I kind of nerd sniped myself. I'm like, I'm going to update that quick, but I'm like, oh yeah, it's on Subversion though, which reminds me that every WordPress plugin in the world, I'm sure some people, all the major plugins are actually in Git, and then they wire up some interesting wiring because ultimately it has to be Subversion. That's where all WordPress plugins live. That's what that system is built on. I don't see them ever changing it. It's like, it's so embedded into that world that it's like, that's just how it's got to be, even though that technology just sucks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, I couldn't articulate it other than there's not very good software for it. There's not very good documentation for it. And it has this weird concept where inside of a Subversion repo isn't just like the stuff. Like in Git, it's just a repo as whatever you want inside of it. There's no like implied structure to it. But in Subversion, there's like trunk and tags and branches. And those things are literal folders, you know, and like, it just is a bummer. So if what you can't do, for example, is just like pull down your Subversion repo into your WordPress plugins folder and have it just be the plugin, and then you can make updates and then push it back up. It's like, no, that doesn't work because your actual files are in /trunk/dist or something, and WordPress can't see down into that folder structure to make it work. It's like,
man.
Anyway, it's just not going to change because some things never change.
Until I fork WordPress and we have Shop Talk Press. And
sure,
let's do it. I'm deleting half of it.
There was a little news on the half of it. Yeah, do it. The HTML includes world.
Pot being stirred over, I think, from Google. Is that, if I have it correct?
I guess, is Noam Rosenthal Google? Yes. And worked on some interesting stuff recently. It's kind of an interesting, because he seems really plugged into the web development community, but is also one of the people who actually put this stuff in browsers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty unicorn-y person these days, I'd say.
Yeah, he has a Corner Shape, which there's a great article on Friend and Masters Boost about Corner Shape. But,
there's two of them on there now. But yeah, he was all behind that. Weirdly powerful. You'd think, you know, like, okay, we have Corner Shape Squircle now. Actually think that's wonderful and great, but also not particularly mega super duper important until you, of course, you put Tamani Afif and on the prowl, and then what, you know, you're like, oh, turns out actually you can make any shape in the world based on it. And even though we just got shape, which is wonderful, this is a little easier to put your hands on.
It's more border radius-y, I would say, you know, more.
But you can use it to do pretty interesting things, especially because there's different shapes you can put on different corners. And have all kinds of different values. So you can do the shape thing. If you need unusual, like, shapes are just going to get weird on the web. It's great. And Amit Sheen has a fantastic one on it too. And also this crucial thing that I think is a interesting thing, that when the web platform does it, they like give you some convenience stuff, but then give you the primitive as well. Sort of. So it's like all this, like, yeah, we got Squircle now and we got Notch or whatever. I forget what all the particular values are. Scoop and Bevel and whatever.
Yeah, Scoop, Bevel, Super Ellipse is kind of the big...
Super Ellipse is the primitive one. Mm-hmm. That's the one where you can do all the other stuff with it. So mm-hmm. it's like if Squirkle isn't doing it for you, you can use Super Ellipse to rock your own Squirkle, which is just so cool. What a nice way to implement that. Well, anyway, that's the guy, mm-hmm. Gnome, and has a explainer somewhere. I guess the explainer is titled Declarative Composable Document Updates. So composable same document fragments, which is interesting. Like, you know, when we talked about it, when we had Jake on the show, it was just like, let's have little chunks of HTML that you include.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. And then let's just come to agreement about the trade-offs and figure it out. Like, do they need to be complete documents? Do they not need that? Are they blocking? Are they not blocking? All that kind of stuff. This is like, it just feels a lot different. This was like, I don't know, I can do some of that stuff and not other stuff, but it feels like more of the main goal is kind of like the, I wish I had digested this more. I'll have to stream it one of these days and read it, but it's about re-rendering some of that stuff too. Like, imagine your Next.js app has a main component or something, and that tends to get, like, the details change and it needs to get re-rendered. This is like that, like this area of the site can be changed at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like, I think the core of it is this view element with the matches attribute that matches some URL pattern.
Routing.
Routing, basically a router, you know, so you could imagine your homepage is, you know, view matches/about, view matches/archives, view matches/contact.
Speaking of VIF, it's like VIF with the URL.
I bet Evan Yu is pissed they're making a view element. No, I'm just kidding. it's interesting. And then it pairs nicely. I'm the HTML sommelier. It pairs nicely with the template element. And so then you say template ID foo, and then there's a mode or something attribute that would replace and prepend and append, which
this
I was
is where I lost it though. I don't get it. It's like, sure, you can put the template later down in the document, but it still needs to be there. So I don't understand what you buy for that.
I think it's the idea of like, if it matches about, then that template replaces the content in that view element.
But they're sitting there right next to each other.
Like, yeah. Why couldn't it be in there?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's maybe weird, but maybe it was to achieve this like loading state sort of thing.
Well, and I think it's true. I think I heard a birdie talk that Chrome's getting more serious about getting HTML streaming more robust or something. Mm-hmm. And that this might align with that incentive, because if you take these templates and you, for example, smash them way down at the bottom of the document or something, maybe that's like more efficient loading or something, or it just somehow jives with streaming HTML better. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's very speculative. This whole thing is speculative, to be honest.
Totally. I think it's interesting. I think, you know, it is kind of trying to pull this SPA style thing into here, which I suppose is handy. I don't know. I'm going to maybe reserve judgment. I just, you know, maybe I'd sit with it for a bit. Cause what I want, I kind of want that cell style syntax from Redwood, where you like can be like, this is the loading, this is the error, this is the, you know, and I think they have these, they kind of address that, but you know, I'd also like that's the, sort of the stuff I'd want to swap, in a view based on the
DOM
template.
Heavy too. Like, well, these view elements, like what if you have a pretty complicated set? Are we saying you're going to put a thousand of these view elements just in the first HTML document that loads?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Yeah.
I want more like on-demand loading. You know, if one of these views matches, then go get the content.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I guess that's what JavaScript already does. So I don't know. I have not digested this whole thing yet, but it does seem relatively interesting. And yeah, I wonder. It's like, does the template tag have a href on it? Because if
no. So yeah.
So it's not really what we're talking about. There is no includes.
No includes, but in theory, we could have the include element, and then you pull that template in, and now it's available in the document. So
it could hang out together with this.
So then you're, So in theory, this could potentially work. I think, I think there was a, I saw Justin Fignani.
I wonder if it's shadow DOMs then.
Well, I saw him saying template is not the tool for this, just because it needs, its goal is to be a pre-parsed template result.
Okay. So not a good like reusing of an element potentially. Yeah,
not a good like dynamic insertion-y sort of thing, or I believe is
what I guess what was nice though is that it doesn't render naturally. So that's probably why GNOME went for it, right? But then then the idea is if the view matches, the guts of the template get plucked out and put up into the view, which, okay, neat. But then you're like, well, what does that do to CSS selectors and stuff? Like, can I use them sensibly, or does it have to shadow DOM it, or what? You know, I feel like that it is confusing when CSS gets involved then to me.
Yeah. I think too, I think it would actually work in like an SPA sort of style thing where like you're basically drawing an island for content and you're saying, if the link matches this, I'm going to fetch a template and put it on the page and then you render it, browser. I'm not going to do the whole like, select this, do a DOM diff, plop this in. Like it just basically a really coarse like addition. So I think that's sort of the intent there. It's based a lot on Hotwired, or if you're on Reddit, HTMX, and so it's that sort of style of kind of like, we have some predefined behaviors that this does. So I, at this point, I think my take was, I'll take anything.
Give me stuff. Yeah,
I want HTML includes, but if this.
Isn't there some native JavaScript routing thing too? I think they do see that. I feel like browser people are always on the prowl for like, what are networks doing that we can steal and ship?
Yes, there's navigator.navigate, which is coming out. It's in Edge and Chrome, according to baseline, limited availability.
Does it have a matches-y syntax? What does it do?
It has, it's kind of like an event, right? So it's almost like pop state or push state, right? So you say navigator.navigate / product listing, and then you tie into the history API and say replace. And so it's, this actually looks very similar to that view element sort of, or the template sort of thing. And the idea is, if you hit a back button, you can use the browser's back or what, I think it's good. I'm blanking on like why it's super better, but I think like, push state was kind of clumsy. Like you can just change the URL. Now what,
right. And then we had pop state so that you could write code elsewhere. Like not like just listen for the URL change in different code, which is kind of nice. But we already have that, so why is this different?
Yeah, and like, you'd have like pop state on a tab open or something like that, and that's like not exactly a navigation, so then it enters the browser history, like so you click back and you're just cycling through tabs as you click back. So there's, I think we need a separate, like we intent, like we are trying to navigate, and I think, just a singular event where you're just like, looking for a navigate, not like a URL change, because a million things could change the URL. So you're looking for like a navigate, but it seems like a good proposal to fix sort of the history APIs kind of clumsiness.
Well, cool. I still have a bunch of notes from the, I wonder which ones are interesting to share. It's one of those things too, as somebody who like creates content sometimes, it's nice to turn these little notes into little pieces of content at some point. Miriam was there, of course. Had some interesting stuff. It was talking about functions and mixins and stuff that like seems pretty likely that will come to CSS and ship. That almost it's almost like we get so much CSS stuff recently that it's like you almost have like amazingness fatigue. You're like, Mixins will be so great. I think that's a super good feature for CSS to have. And some you like, you know, I'll feel like we'll just go to sleep and have it some morning, even though I know there's like a ton of work that has to happen between now and then. But that's just what it feels like. You know, CSS moves so quickly. But Mixins is an easy one to wrap your mind around because it's just you name a Mixin. Maybe we'll force it to have a custom ident. That'd be cool. You know, you name it. Dave's rounded corners or something. And then a Mixin can apply not just one thing, but a whole block of stuff and nested stuff and all this. And I think that can be really cool. The number one use case, you know, that was popping through my head while I was at CSS Day is that Adam did a talk on carousel stuff and scrolling. And he's such a cool detail oriented dude that there was just like line of code after line of code after line of code, like polishing up the look and experience of a carousel look. And by the end of it, it's like, there's a lot here. Styling the scroll bars, styling the behavior, snapping the scrolling, applying all these buttons and pseudo elements and fancy stuff to the point where it's really nice and polished at the end, but also not overly designed. Styled, like there's not designed, so much going on, right? But it's still like a lot of code, and it's like that could just be a Mixin. Somebody could pick that thing up and they could just have it be this generic Mixin that you could apply. And Mixins also take parameters like functions, so you could say, you know, scroll buttons true.
One second, I want to catch up on this. I have dogs freaking out. I'll be right back. Dogs are great. Dogs are wonderful. Sometimes they eat an entire blanket and impact their bowels, and you have to pay $1,200.
Oh my gosh.
Love dogs.
Yeah, totally. Anyway. I'm always stories like that. My buddy's dog has been porcupined like 5 times or something. I'm like, that, I don't think they're going to make it. Anyway, no, there's native Mixins.
Native Mixins. And so
you call it something dash dash something. We're just going to assume that they're idents, even though if something tells me they're not going to ship with custom idents. I don't know why, but we'll see if they do.
CSS Mixin. CSSMixin.com.
There's barely even an explainer yet. But I also feel like it's almost so obvious that maybe it doesn't need one. So you declare it with Mixin, kind of like you're declaring a custom property or whatever. And then you use it with at apply. So that's different. I think it was include in SAS. But now it's going to be apply. I don't care. That seems fine. And then you may or may not pass parameters to it, but that could be like, I want scroll buttons true, scroll dots false. You know, like if we're talking about this carousel Mixin, that seems awesome to me to be able to pass these things in. And then I think, like custom properties, they would re-render if stuff like that changes, or I don't know, like if a property a value that you're passing a Mixin is a custom property, and that custom property changes, then the Mixin that got applied would also change in real time. That's the kind of neat stuff that CSS can do that SAS could never do. So like, you know, because I think Miriam was saying, and I think this is a little bit of a hallway conversation, was sure, we can do Mixin, but to sell it internally, can we paint a picture that we should do it and not just leave it to SAS? Because there is some pushback on stuff like that. Like, if another tool can do it perfectly well or better, why bother doing it? So the picture needs to be painted that it can do things that only the browser can do. And then the re-rendering, in my guess is the top thing. I think that's unique to what it could do. There's a related concept in SAS. Do you remember there was the one that everybody, the general advice was to never use it, extend, add extend in SAS. And the idea was that you'd say add extend and then give it another selector, and SAS would go find that other selector and
plop it out.
Yeah, but it didn't work like a Mixin. It didn't take their styles and go put it in this new style. It like comma separated the original selector to have the selector applying to the extend too.
Yeah.
And it meant that you could get some out of order CSS. Like, it would mess with the the order of CSS a little bit in a way that was a little unpredictable, and you could end up making like super long comma separated selector chains on accident. So it was like not a particularly useful one to say, but this is what it would be easy to paint a picture to browsers. So you're like, look at how poorly SAS had to implement this, you know, and it's not even SAS's fault. It's just, that's what the feature did. But you could say browsers wouldn't have to do that. They don't have to do this comma separating selector garbage. Extend natively would just like work. It would just mm-hmm. be like, oh, I see. You're trying to take the styles from this other selector. I'll just go get them and apply them. I don't have to actually mess with your authored CSS to do this. So painting the picture for extend would be easy. I don't think there's any conversation about extend natively yet.
Extend seemed like always like a foot gun, just because you end up with those super combos selectors, and then now you have all your specificity super jacked.
Right, and like where does that selector get made? Is it after where you're currently authoring, or is it before where you're currently authoring? And you're like, shruggy shrug, I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully it goes to the bottom. So I'm looking at the blog post from Miriam. It does have --- or --button, so mix in.
Oh,
so
yeah, like, they are custom items?
Yeah.
Oh, you know Miriam's going to do it right.
Boom. It takes like it takes parameters. So those are all like --face, --text, --read.
That's what I mean. Like, that's the only reason it would need to re-render is if the parameters changed. Otherwise, you know, there's no reason to re-render a mix in.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting. So it kind of fixes that like calc issue where you have like a CSS variable with calc, or does it, where you like you calced up a CSS variable and it just got stuck. So it kind of fixes that maybe, or
I don't know.
Okay.
Interestingly, that is in my notes here though, because Miriam started talking about that too. So apparently your brains work a little similarly in some way. But speaking of custom properties, you know, they're like almost always valid, right? Like it's very little that you can't give a custom property to make it invalid. It'll just freaking take anything. Like a space, for example, is fine as the value of a custom property. Really weird.
Yeah.
There are a few invalid things, but I don't even remember what they are exactly. Maybe the empty var like function.
URL or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Right. Or even if they're not invalid, they don't work how you'd think. Like URL just becomes a string that says that, which is useless.
Yeah. There's a few twists, right?
Right. So that in some circumstances can be very surprising. And this is too hard to mouth blog, so I'm just going to give you the gist of it, is that like some things like look invalid. So you'd think that the browser would like throw them away, but it doesn't. So this comes up if you set like the color or something to something that it clearly isn't a color. It doesn't matter. The browser is going to throw it away when it's used.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time it's done that with custom properties, it like, I don't know. It's I absolutely just need to write this up. And I think some people kind of intuitively know this, but it leads to those little CSS quiz kind of things where you're like, look, these three selectors.
Kevin Powell ones that where I get 0 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All apply a different color. Which color will it actually be? And it's like, it tends to be a unintuitive one. And the reason it's unintuitive is because like the custom property is, even though it looks invalid, is actually valid and blah, blah. And it never goes and like reevaluates it later. I know that's too hard to explain, but I was so into how Miriam explained it that I need to do it myself so I can.
Somebody should make one of those quizzes where it's like, you know, what color is it? Red, blue, or green? But then it's like, but it's actually hooked up to like an animation of a bomb with like wires, and you have to clip the right wire. Like,
oh my God.
That would be great.
CSS is already stressful, and you're just going to crank up the notch.
Just give it like CSS or die.
Yeah.
Graphic. We need graphic packages, Chris. That's interesting. Yeah, I was dealing with this. CSS tries to help you, it tries to figure out what you're doing. Yeah, but then when it can't, it says later, I'm out, bye. You know, where right. HTML will like partially render your garbage. CSS actually is the opposite. And it says like, I'm going to ignore this piece, bud. You looks like you got carried away. And that's frustrating because HTML is showing it. CSS is like bailing. And then JavaScript is like, I don't work at all. Like, I'm just, dude, you had PX on a number. I just quit, you know? So it's really, there's this like gradient of support or like interpretation of values. And it's just, it's kind of funny.
You could argue that it used to be simpler. I mean, that stuff has always been true. But this idea that like custom properties exist now and their values are cached and that can be confusing was like a complication of the language that it would be a valid opinion to say that CSS jumped the shark when they did that. And then it almost, you know, like it almost has like an execution order now that's weird and stuff. I don't think that. I generally think putting power in CSS is nice, but they wouldn't be wrong for saying that, you know. But I did get the vibe there, really surprisingly, that like as fast moving as CSS is and all this powerful stuff, that it's gonna start slowing down. Like this is always feels like a joke to say, but it's kind of approaching a level of feature completeness.
CSS?
Like now that, CSS. Now that we have like really strong layout mechanisms and yeah, there's still some stuff it needs, some better paging and some better region stuff. And, you know, maybe we could get double slash comments someday. That would be neat. But like, there's not so much left to do. And maybe we'll all eat our words and there's a lot to do, but that CSS super time is going to slow down.
I wonder if functions, which is kind of tied up into this mixins thing.
It is. They can only be a value, by the way. So that's good to, it's good to remember that a function can only just return one value.
Mm-hmm. And we have if in Chrome now, right? Chromium. I wonder if that's the end game for CSS in some ways, but not like, because now all these features were like, oh, it'd be so cool if you could like, I don't know, like split a variable up into different parts and apply them or something like that, you know, like a composited variable or whatever, a random seed gen or something like that. And you like could split that up in style based on that or something like that. You know, I think we're getting very close to where you can do that stuff and through functions and, you know, these little pet features where I want a shorthand for this. It's like, well, CSS is like, hey, well, we have mixins and functions now. So there's your shorthands. Good luck. Like Sass didn't evolve super much after it got all these sort of primitives or logic loops.
Because it kind of didn't need to, you know, certain things are just kind of done. I ended up talking about CSS modules in the talk because my talk was about scope. And you should look at the node or the GitHub commit graph for CSS modules. They just like thought it up in 2015 and there's a bunch of commits and then that's it, you know? And then I looked, there's like one little spike in, you know, like 10 years later where they just fixed some stuff in the README. You know, like otherwise untouched. And I think technologies like that are cool, that like there's a flurry of work and it does something really nice and then they just leave it alone
and we say goodbye.
JSON, a classic example.
Yeah
functions are okay. I think it's fascinating to look at them because CSS doesn't have an execution order. So we're so used to reading functions as like, well, then at the bottom of the function, you return something. You know, I know there's early returns and stuff too, but you think of it as like, it does this and then this and then this. Like functions are, they feel like they need to have an order to them, but they just do not in CSS. You can return in the middle of it whatever you want, but it doesn't mean that the stuff after that return, or they call it something else, it's not return, they use some other word, I forget what it is.
Is it not at returns or something?
Yeah, well, value, I don't know what it is.
Result
instead of return. Sure, fine. I think it was partially for that reason, is that they like it behaves differently than return does. Return makes you think that the rest of the code after it will not be run, and that's not true in CSS. It is true that the first one that it, like if you had a media query above it that returned something, that like that one will happen first and then that will be the return value. So it like kind of matters the order, but not entirely. It's weird to think about.
Yeah.
A function with no order.
So, like, here's an example. I had a CSS idea the other day where it'd be, you know, the problem was, like, you know, people put cards. It's always freaking cards, man. You have cards, and so now your background needs it. Because you have a card, you have to have a background color, right? A grayish, right? And then you put the card on, and that's another grayish. And then somebody's like, I want another card on top of the card. And so you put a card on top of the card. And then you put now the cards are really big, and you have a bunch of cards. And then there's going to be another card in there. So, like, you start layering up these layers with backgrounds and colors. And so you need the background color to kind of, like, change. But you can't be, like card, background, purple, you know, you can't be like a static value there or even like a static right. CSS variable. Cause you're like, you need that to change based on the stacking context. And so I was like, I would be cool to have stacking context aware styles. Like you pass like background color stack parentheses, color one, color two, color three. And then it would see if it's on the current thing and pick the next one.
Interesting. Well, almost like an if that is aware of stacking context. Yeah. You have a further thought, so keep going.
Oh, well, so this has already been invented. Kizu, CSS wizard Kizu, has like a post on, let's see, it's called alternating style queries, where he's kind of just switching between two colors, you know, sort of flippy flopping, which is awesome, or three colors, I guess. Which is kind of cool because I think eventually you do sort of want
to
maybe.
Yeah, don't you? You have to kind of like trap one of the variables and then use a style query.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think style queries are fine, but one, there are a lot of times the example use cases I see are mix-ins. That's what mm-hmm. it's trying to do. And that they can only do custom properties, which is not doesn't match with people's mental model of what a style query is. They think they should be like, oh, well, if I want to, if the style is Z index 5, then do something. But mm-hmm. you can't because it only works with custom properties. So I'm kind of like a weird anti fan of style queries because I think we just need the other stuff that people are actually trying to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway. You want like if background pink or whatever, not like
which it should be able to do, but it can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, so there's a way to like, if you just sort of like have these variables, like, you know, if background is some, or, you know, or maybe you're even just saying like layer.
But now you can use if is what you're saying. Maybe now you can use if.
Yeah. Well, if, and Miriam came back with if, and then you could maybe chuck that if inside of a mix in. And then now we are very close to my idea of like a stack. Yeah, function like
right.
You know, it would have to be dash dash stack, but I'm okay with that. You know, because I think there's just this sort of powerful thing of like, hey, we could start kind of like building out these, you know, more complex UIs, more responsive, but you know, not have to wait 20 years for a browser to ship a feature. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know. I'll walk back my CSS's complete comment because I do think there's things that can do still and needs to do, but I do think, like, you know, I think the intent going back to even Houdini or whatever to put the power in the hands of the user is good. Like, you know, it offloads so much of what, you know, the language has to do if you give people the tools to build their own things. So
yeah, speaking of things that are dead, that seems very dead.
What's
Houdini?
That? Houdini, I think, is busted. I have Houdini on my site. I'm using a Paintlet, and I have to figure out an alternative. You
know, I just mean they're not going to rip it, probably. I just mean, like, as a concept, it had all these lofty ambitions, which are, I think, over.
And I think I can, like, upcycle the parts of it and be like, generate, hey, off-screen canvas, generate me an image, and then I'm going to make that my background image. So, you know, that stinks, but
that was like, easy. That seemed like, okay, sure. It's a canvas and you paint it. Like you didn't have to like invent entirely new universes out of that. It's like canvas to BG. Got it. Whereas, you know, there was a promise that you could invent your own layout mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is just not, we never saw a single example of it, I don't think. I mean, I think there was some kind of
demo, but
did it use, I don't know how it worked. It wasn't quite. I think
it just did grid and then minused pixels as they were available or something.
Right. So, but like, what if you want a different grid? It was like, how much code are you writing to do that? Like, are you, it's like a writing a browser.
Yeah. What would it take to get display Mondrian? Like, would you ever be able to do that? You know, just like fractals and like randoms and
No cheating. You can't use any other layout mechanism. You have to, write an entirely new one and have every use, every single case other interact with every other possible thing. Like, it just seems implausible to me.
Yeah.
So, but whatever. I don't mean to be a naysayer. Yo.
Yeah, lofty, but yeah, it didn't take so, or didn't, you know.
Yeah. Well, you've been on a resizing text bender a little bit. Was that just today you hit publish on that one?
Well, I posted like a blue sky, a toot last week.
I remember
week.
Us talking about it in the Discord.
Yeah, we're like in the Discord. Somebody mentioned it, Ginger maybe, and then I was like, hey, wait, I think we can do this.
I coughed up an old PHP implementation of it that I used on my quotes on design site, but it was so, I looked at the code and I was like, oh my God, I feel like 5 years old looking at that code. It's like split string by characters. If characters greater than 10, then font size equals 32 pixels or something. I wrote some very magic number riffic.
Well, I've done the same thing in JavaScript. You know, you're like, if character numcars greater than 32, add class large, you know, that sort of thing. And it was cool, but it never felt right. You know, it never felt like
the less characters, the bigger the text, the more characters, the smaller the text. That's what we're trying to do here. Right.
Yeah. So, and that's the trick, is inverse sizing. Like with fit text, I figured out linear scaling, you know, like how to make it scale with the parent width, you know, like you are scaling based on the space available, right? But oftentimes that's not what you want. What you want is, if you have very long text, if you are like me and you write a small novel for your page titles, you actually want that to take up less space, but still have like hierarchy in the system. You want this long text to like shrink to an appropriate size based on how many characters are in there. You have to measure the text. Like, there's no CSS text length or whatever. So that's unfortunate.
Or HTML. Yeah. At some point you got to count them.
So you have to,
you could do it server side though.
I do it in my template, my Jekyll template. And, you know, but you can do it in a very quick JavaScript loop, like query selector, all H1 data numcars or H1 data set.
Oh, dot length, I guess, if it's a string already.
Numcars equals text content dot length. Yeah. So pretty simple to do, like from getting that length. But the trick was that never worked until the adder upgrades, because we talked about it, I think, last week on the show.
Sure, you could set data number cares equals 88, but 88 is a string and not useful in CSS.
Yeah, so it's going to try to, like, if you try to put that in some math, it's going to be like 95 divided by string, and it just useless. Craps out, and CSS does nothing, kind of like what I was saying earlier. So what's cool is now you can typecast it and say, that's a number now. So every time when you pull this in, it's a number. And there's another trick, like not all browsers have that. So we actually just define the property and set an initial value, and we tell it's a number two. So like when it's doing its division, but the secret sauce is a ratio. So you come up with the ratio, like your ideal characters per line. For a heading, I'm going to just say it's 45.
I feel like ratio is a fancy way of making a magic number. Okay.
Yeah, it's ideal characters per line divided by the number of characters in your thing, the numcars that you actually have.
Yeah. And num characters per line is actually like a decision.
Yeah, it's a typographic principle, I guess. It is, you know, 66 for like content is ideal, but you read blog posts, it's anywhere from 40
to 70 or something.
Yeah, 45 to 70, but on mobile it's maybe 30 to 50 or something like that. So I pick 45, but you can do whatever you want. I'm not your boss. So we take the I'm gonna be boss of the internet soon. You So you take that, you make a ratio. And what's critical about that is your ratio is now inverse. Small text will be like 45 divided by 20. And so that's going to be a number greater than one. So it's going to try to multiply it big, right? Mm-hmm. Or if it's long text, it's 45 divided by 200. So now that's a very small number. So it's going to, so when I say like, and now I put in a clamp function, I have a min font size 1m, a max font size 4m, and then I'm going to times that max font size by that ratio, that inverse ratio.
Right.
And large text or small, short text, sorry, I should say short and long text. Short text will have
gets bigger.
It'll try to get bigger, but it'll get clamped down immediately. So it hits the max. That's what you want. Yep. Long text will, it actually, you know, because an inverse fraction is going to divide the text. And so it's going to like shrink down until it hits the min.
Yeah.
And there, Bob's your uncle. So pretty simple.
Clamp. So clamp is a crucial aspect to it too, because you don't, you want limits to what's going on with this ratio.
Yeah. I mean, you can roll without it for sure, but that's not what you want because you need legibility. And then you can also use that to like maintain, you know, hierarchy.
This is funny. It's like really related to the fit width stuff because it kind of is that, but it's not quite, because that didn't care about how much text there was. Not really. It just wanted to fit edge to edge.
Yeah. So that's fit to width is Kizu's thing. Again, CSS super genius. I do the dumb things. I depend on other people to do the very smart things.
I was just playing with it yesterday. Kizu, Roman's thing, was also used clamp, though. It does do the smart thing where it's like, well, don't make sure it doesn't get too small.
Yeah.
Which so is I, nice. Thanks, yeah, clamp.
I think that's great. And so I actually want the text wrapping feature. Like, so that's kind of why I just do the one axis. I don't try to exact fit it. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Optional max was a neat trick in that code too, by the way, just while we're mouth blogging interesting CSS tricks. So the in clamp, it's the minimum, then the whatever the really variable thing is in the middle,
kind of like a scalar value, usually like a
right, that like hopefully it's going to use that value, but if it's too little, it'll get clamped by the smaller number. Then the third one is the maximum, so it's like minimum, ideal, maximum. So I always struggle with what to call the middle one, scalar, I guess. But the maximum he set to var dash dash max font size comma infinity times 1 pixel, so it was an optional maximum value. It's like it doesn't set a maximum value because the fallback is infinity, so it doesn't really have one. But if you want to, you can set max font size, and then it will clamp. So I thought that was a very clever little mini trick, is to have an optional maximum.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Using variable fallbacks.
I think for that situation, I think you do need it, right? Like, because you're trying to just grow it until it stops, right? Like, you just grow until it stops.
So
I made this trick, posted it. Paul Irish came back and actually made kind of that fit to width text thing.
Like 2025 Paul Irish?
2025 Paul Irish.
Out of nowhere?
Whoa. Oh, Hail Mary. Ghost ghost appearing from like a
Did he fork a pen?
He forked a pen.
I didn't even know he had a CodePen account.
Well, there you go. So Paul Irish came back from retirement to fork a pen. But he basically replicated this exactly fitting width text thing, you know, kind of setting the font size or the ideal CPM based on what it was, you know. It's not exact, like you'll see like little, you know, half pixels or, you know, you could,
but yeah, optically, fair enough,
it looks correct, it's there, right? So
absolutely.
So it's a pretty efficient tool for that, like, too. So you can achieve that effect. Use Kizu's thing if you need it exact, but, you know, this thing.
I was trying to do some fit to width stuff when it's almost decorative sometimes what you're trying to do with fit to width. Like it's generally like a fairly small word that becomes enormous, like the homepage of fit text or whatever. And I was like, you know, you can do this with just a viewport unit, you know, like it's a magic number then. So that's a bummer, but. And I know that you're supposed to put a little calc in there and put in some rems or something so that it scales with the user's choice too. But like almost not when it's a enormous already. And two, it's just a decoration. Like it's barely it's, you know, I don't know. Like, it was like one of the rare cases where I'm like, setting some text in a viewport unit is like almost okay. If it's a one off, that's enormous anyway.
Yeah.
Not to.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, if you know what that text is, you know, there's like this issue of localization, you know, like what if it translates and stuff like that. And, you know, to be honest, mine doesn't really account for that because you'd have to recalculate data numcars if it translated and you don't get like a Google translated this page on the fly event, you know,
but no, I don't even know how, like, how does Japanese split cars? Would the characters be way lower?
Yeah. I wonder how it would work. Characters would be way lower. I mean, that's actually like the ideal CPM for Chinese, Japanese, Korean, CJK, is actually smaller too. It's actually 30 to 50 as well. Well,
it seems like the characters are much more detailed. You'd like want them to be bigger.
You want them bigger. And you want, I actually learned this recently, I was talking to a team in China, but you want like more line height in between, like the rows.
Okay.
You want actually letter spacing. You want to actually use the letter spacing property in CSS to kind of give them a little schmooch. But then you also are, you know, the line length, how they break is really important. Like, you don't want a word to get cut off. There's new CSS actually to fix all that stuff. And somebody had a really great post on this recently. I can't remember.
Was it baked into the text wrap pretty conversation?
I think it was around that, but it was just basically like, here's what you need to know about, you know, internationalization. And it was a really, really good post. I wish I could remember who did it, but.
Oh, gosh. Now that's ringing a bell too. Yeah.
I want to say like.
Article about CSS stuff.
Quiz Heather me. Michelle, you know? Or something like that. Yeah, no, this would be my death knell on Leet Heat.
I also know what you mean, though. Yeah, it's like, exactly. It was like that. It was things you need to know about, or things I wish I knew about internationalization. It was a really detailed post.
Everything from that article, but then you're like, who wrote the article?
And I feel like the layout was kind of pink, too.
Damn. Yeah. I'm terrible with names. So there's a lot of concerns there, but. Yeah, so it should still work, but yeah, it would be kind of different, you know. So it's maybe single localization, or, you know, Western, or like whatever your geo region is. Like if you're Cyrillic, or if you're German, or if you're
tricky. Of course, it's tricky though. Fortunately, for the most part, I think we're playing around, right? We're stretching what CSS can do. We're having a little fun with this stuff. If we had to ship it to the homepage of Microsoft and we knew that it was going to be translated and all this type of stuff, we would do better.
No one here has asked for this, you know. So, no. zero people asked for this. I need it. It's just this. I write long headings. And it annoys me when I pull up my phone.
This is a feature of DaveRupert.com.
And it's 4.5 rem or what M, and it's like 20 miles long, you know? So that's kind of frustrates me. So I'm glad I have a solution now. So
yeah. God, there's so many other ones too. I'm thinking of not previous tricks of, I remember how slides.com used to work, you know, Hakim's thing.
Oh,
that
yeah,
would like
yeah.
when a slide got, I don't think it was based on the length of the text, but you know, a slide needed to scale exactly. It did, like, no reflowing was desirable. Mm-hmm. He did it all with transforms and stuff that I thought was pretty cool. But that was my original thinking on quotes on design, is I wanted like each quote to like approximately take up the same amount of space, whether it was few words or lots of words or whatever.
Yeah.
And fortunately, just setting some hard pixel sizes back then, like, got close enough because the requirements of that project were pretty loose.
You could do it with this. You just, instead of a font size, you said scale with a clamp. Bingo, bango.
All right, man. We done did it. I don't even remember what we talked about today, but it was probably important.
Websites. So big, important websites. So, thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to shard it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on one of the good ones, Mastodon or Blue Sky Shop Talk Show, and join us in the Discord. Somebody pointed out today we don't have that on our website, but remember this URL, patreon.com/shoptalkshow.
We don't link to Patreon?
I don't think so.
How does anyone find it? Oh my God, that's crazy.
They are closers. They're cool people who listen to the end.
They're looking in the footer probably where it should also be, but it is in the header.
Oh, it's in the header. Oh.
That's pretty weak. Weak sauce. We should take a lesson from Brad and Ian, who promote their new course with giant links, which is what you should do when you do a bunch of work on something.
Yeah.
Although maybe we should make our link extra tiny then, because while we hang out in Discord and love it, the amount of
maybe we should
work I'd say we put into we should, it is
put a function low. That scales our website, you know, based on how much work we do.
Gets smaller and smaller. You have to, if you want it to be 100%, you have to have committed in the last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, otherwise it just starts every day, it goes like 0.01 like smaller or whatever, and just kind of based on last git commit.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
All right. Chris, you got anything else?
SVG filter to make it all squiggly?
Oh, yes, please.
I don't. I'm just going to say shoptalkshow.com. Actually, Dave has to do the like and subscribe stuff first, which you have memorized, surely.
Oh, no, I said I like and
subscribe. You already said it?
Yeah, I said it. We're good.
Oh, I went on Patreon. Where am I? Shoptalkshow.com. See you next week.